evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C. Nigerians go to the polls Saturday for governorship and state assembly elections.
Nigerians are hopeful that some of the challenges experienced during the presidential and national assembly elections will be corrected.
The Electoral Commission of Sierra Leone plans to distribute voter registration cards in April.
We started off by preparing what we call the legal reforms. All of the laws are now in place. We have amended the Public Elections Act that came into effect in 2022. We've also gone ahead to do the registration of voters, and now we have a final list of voters.
And South African President Cyril Ramaphosa places the army on alert ahead of anti-government protests on Monday. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Nigerians go to the polls Saturday for governorship and state assembly elections as controversy continues over the conduct of the presidential and national assembly vote. Authorities say they expect that voters would have no problems casting their ballot, but some voters express concern. For VOA reporter Gift Agiriga samples the opinions of some analysts and residents.
In today's election, 837 governorship candidates will slog it out in the 28 states, while 10,240 candidates will battle for 993 state assembly seats in 1,021 constituencies across the country. Of the 28 states, 11 governors are seeking re-election, while 17 outgoing governors will complete their constitutional two-term limits of 8 years by May 29, 2023. The mood in Nigeria is gloomy and filled with mixed feelings as the hour approaches. Some Nigerians who spoke to VOA could not hide their emotions.
Of course, our vote. I believe the election on this Saturday will be peaceful and generally okay in different parts of Nigeria.
The truth there is, I won't be going out to vote. I went, the results they gave us is not the real result.
Though I was disappointed with the past performance of the INEC, but that will not deter me. I will still come and vote my candidate.
Really, I will not go out to vote because I now know that the votes of Nigerians are not counted. We are so disappointed. I wish them all the best.
For now, I'm indifferent about it because of what transpired on the 25th of February. We made a caricature of ourselves on the global space.
The governorship and state assembly elections are being held a week later than initially scheduled. This after a court case forced the electoral body in charge of the vote in Nigeria, the Independent National Electoral Commission, or INEC, to move it forward. Barring any further change, Nigerians are expected to head to the polls nationwide. The Nigeria Civil Society Situation Room, which is a coalition of over 70 civil society organizations that monitor Nigerians' electoral process, has praised the resilience of the Nigerian voters. The convener of the Nigeria Civil Society Situation Room and country director of Action Aid, Ms. Enobi, encouraged Nigerians to come out to exercise their civic duty.
Let them continue and not give up. We can change this country because of the efforts that we put in. But impunity of issues of sanction is an area that the security and also the judiciary and INEC itself should be able to pay serious attention to, because everything they do, we from the civil society will be mirroring them and will hold everybody accountable. But citizens should please be free to go out and vote. Do not give up on your country.
There were reported cases of violence, intimidation and suppression of the vote during the presidential and national assembly elections. Obi called on the security agencies to ensure hitch-free elections.
We are also asking the security agencies, the police, which is the lead agency in this election, to ensure that voters are protected, ad hoc staff are protected, all stakeholders, observers are also protected as they go in, unlike some of the things that happened during the presidential and national assembly election.
The INEC has assured that hitches that characterized the earlier polls have been resolved, but the politician, who is also a legal practitioner, Felix Edewo, told VOA that the electoral body seems to have been compromised, making Nigerians indifferent to the governorship and state assembly polls.
It's clear because everyone believed that there's malpractice in the last election. And when you are taking any examination and you do your best and your best is not good enough for the examiner, you will be wary to go ahead to take another chance. The malpractice that is obvious have killed the zeal of the electorate to go out there to go and vote.
Edewo said it would take a lot by the electoral body to encourage the electorate to come out in large numbers this Saturday. Meanwhile, 8 of the 36 states in Nigeria, namely Anambra, Bayelsa, Edo, Ekiti, Imo, Kogi, Osun and Ondo, have governorship elections off-season due to litigation and court judgments. For VOA News, from Abuja, Nigeria.
Nigerians vote for new governors in 31 of the 36 states Saturday. This after the Independent National Electoral Commission, or INEC, postponed for a week the gubernatorial election. It said there was not enough time to reset its voting machines following the February 25th presidential and national assembly vote. Some Nigerians are expressing displeasure in the outcome of the presidential ballot. They say INEC failed to keep to its promise to use an electronic system for tallying the count, which led to manipulation and rigging, an accusation INEC denies. Some analysts say they expect turnout for Saturday's elections to be low compared to the presidential vote. For the latest development about the gubernatorial and state assembly elections, I reach Ibrahim Momo, a Nigerian political analyst based in the capital Abuja.
Nigerians are very, very hopeful that some of the challenges experienced during the presidential and national assembly elections will be corrected, because quite a number of challenges we are experienced in the course of the last election. The first, on the part of INEC, the lateness in the arrival of personnel and materials for conducting the elections, as well as the lateness in the uploading of results to the result viewing portal, INEC result viewing portal.
There have been concerns about politically related violence in some states. One key example is Lagos State, and other states have been mentioned as violence-prone areas where there could be possible violence. How are people reacting to this, and what are the security agencies saying about addressing some of these concerns?
Security agencies have been mentioned, training up some states. We mentioned Lagos State, Rivers State, Kano State, Delta State, Kaduna State, Enugu State, Benue State, Oyo and Jigawa State. These are the states that have been, the security agents are saying that they are likely what you call flashpoints, where violence are likely to occur. And because of the sharp divisions and the strength, that is a equalness in the strength or in the support base of the major political parties. And so it's going to be very highly contested in some of these states. So the security agencies are already raising the issue. There was a meeting held between the election managing body, INEC, and then the National Security Advisor to the President just Wednesday. And the bottom line, is that they are calling on politicians to rein in their supporters, to realize that it's elections, not warfare.
Following the presidential election, a lot of people got angry. They said they don't have confidence in the INEC's ability to organize credible polls, Some of them even cut up their PVC, permanent voter card, saying that the elections were not credible. Are Nigerians expecting the elections on Saturday to be credible, especially with what they viewed as a manipulation of election results during the presidential vote?
I've listened to one of the frontline candidates, Peter Obi of the Labour Party, say that he doesn't have issues with the result as they claimed. You know, definitely had been widely publicized, but what he had issues with was the conduct, the process, the way the election was conducted. So he's complaining more about the process rather than the outcome, meaning that the outcome appears to be a fair representation, you know, of the voters' wish. Even when you look at the pattern, every candidate won in their strongholds, if you may. And so people are not complaining really about the outcome as much as the fact that some of the things that the election management body promised, they didn't deliver.
People are questioning whether it is important at all because they feel disappointed in how the INEC conducted the last election. How important is this election?
It's very important. And the election is very important. Beyond the presidential election, and the gubernatorial elections are the second most important or most powerful positions to hold in the state, in the country. So it's going to be keenly contested. Regarding voter turnout, in fact, when you look at the total number of voters who turned out, it's just about a third of registered voters that came out for the presidential election. So historically, Nigerian voters tend not to turn out in their numbers for elections. Even the presidential election, only about just under a third of registered voters. Nigeria has about 91 million registered voters, and less than 30 million came out to vote during the last election. So I'm not sure we're going to have a large voter turnout, but I think that in particularly those identified flashpoints, those states where elections are going to be keenly contested, we expect to see, in at least 10 states across the country, a high percentage of voter turnout.
Ibrahim Momo is a Nigerian political analyst. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja.
March is Women's History Month, and there's no better time to celebrate the accomplishments of women. Tell us about the woman that left positive marks in your life. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA is always happy to hear your voice. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
The Electoral Commission of Sierra Leone says the distribution of voter registration cards will last from April 7 to April 16. It is encouraging prospective voters to fill out for their cards to enable them to vote in the coming June 24 general election. Meanwhile, the Electoral Management Body also says official campaigning is scheduled from May 23rd until June 22nd, 2 days before the vote. Incumbent President Julius Maada Bio is seeking a second and final term. He is expected to face a stiff challenge from former Foreign Minister Samura Kamara, who narrowly lost to Bio in the last presidential contest. For more on the Commission's preparations for the coming ballot, I reach Raymond George. He is a spokesman for Sierra Leone's Electoral Commission.
Since we are having all four elections in one day, we set up the campaign period for local government, ordinary members of parliament, presidential, to start on the 23rd of May 2023. And it's going to end on the 22nd of June. The election is on the 24th of June 2023. And normally we have a cooling off period. So it will end on the 22nd June. And the 23rd will be a cooling off day.
So how are preparations so far by the Electoral Commission to organize these elections that are coming up in June?
Now, we've gone a long way. First and foremost, we started off by preparing what we call the legal reforms. All of the laws are now in place. We have amended the Public Elections Act that came into effect in 2022. We've also gone ahead to do the registration of voters, and now we have a final list of voters that we now call the Register of Voters, in which we have 3,374,258 names in that register. Those are the people eligible to take part in the elections. And we've also carried out the exhibition exercise, and we'll very soon be distributing the voter ID cards across the country. And we have put in place also systems. We've trained the staff, and they will be ready to distribute these cards. We are opening 3,630 centers simultaneously across the 16 electoral districts, and we are in the process of training the staff that will be carrying out the process.
How about education of voters?
Now, education is a continuous process, and we are on it. We have a department now that is responsible for electoral education. In previous dispensations, that department was subsumed under the training and procedures department, but now it is standing out as a department on its own. And we are doing both traditional and modern methods of educating the voters.
Will that include the mass media and on social media platforms as well?
Yes, all of them. We are using, as I said, traditional. We're using the radio stations. We're using flyers, banners, posters, billboards. And we also engage in almost all of the social media platforms. We're on WhatsApp, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we are on Instagram. We are engaging all aspects of the media. And we also have what we call the World Electoral Education Committee. This is a committee that is formed in all chiefdoms, in all of our 446 wards. They are everywhere. So what we do to them is that we give them pre-recorded messages for them to be uniform, and we send them out to all of the electorates using megaphones. So there are 7 members in each committee, including 2 town criers. So that's what we're doing. We are making sure we engage them and that we get them all on board. We are doing massive education, and we are targeting every nook and cranny within the country.
How is the Electoral Commission engaging the political parties in your processes to ensure transparency and credibility of the electoral process?
Now, we have a political party liaison committee. It is a committee that meets every fortnightly, and that is where we discuss matters with the political parties. It's comprised of political party leaders, executive members, civil society, observer groups, and other democratic institutions. That is where we normally meet and we take decisions. And they are involved, they are engaged in that platform. We also have stakeholder groups, and we also have meetings with them. And we discuss before we move out with any policy or information that we want to get out to the public.
Raymond George is a spokesman for Sierra Leone's Electoral Commission. He spoke with me from the capital, Freetown. South Africa President Cyril Ramaphosa has placed the army on alert ahead of anti-government protests on Monday. The country's third biggest party, the Economic Freedom Fighters, or the EFF, has called for a national shutdown. It says thousands will march on the government seat of power, the Union Buildings in Pretoria, to demand Ramaphosa's resignation. For VOA, Darren Taylor reports.
Like many South Africans, the EFF blames the ruling African National Congress for high crime and unemployment and the long electricity outages that now happen daily. Thousands of jobs and lives are being lost as national power company Eskom fails to keep the lights on. Whistleblowers have exposed how criminal groups, some apparently linked to senior ANC officials, are stealing equipment and coal at Eskom. The ANC acknowledges it mismanaged Eskom in the past, but denies criminality. A commission of inquiry has, however, found that former President Jacob Zuma and several ANC ministers looted state-owned enterprises, including Eskom.
We cannot fold our arms when the country is on the brink of collapse.
EFF leader Julius Malema says his comrades will make sure South Africa closes on Monday. There'll be no shopping, no work at factories, no banking, no schooling. Nothing will be allowed to operate, says Malema, except emergency services, hospitals, clinics and police stations. Speaking to reporters yesterday, ANC Secretary General Fikile Mbalula criticized the EFF's call for the nation to shut down.
No South African must be infringed from going to work and children going to school on Monday. It must be business as usual. Those who march must march. But to shut down the economy, it is anarchy at its highest order.
Messages appearing to be from EFF members on social media threaten violence against people who go to work on Monday. Mbalula says companies have also received letters and emails warning of severe consequences if they open.
If lives will be lost on Monday, if shops will be closed on Monday, the leadership of the political party EFF must take responsibility. We are not against any march against our government, but to shut down the economy and call on illegal activities to happen in our country, that we condemn.
A statement from South Africa's cabinet says it considers the protests to be aimed at regime change. Ramaphosa told a subsequent meeting he'd placed the army on standby.
Those who want to protest, by all means, you protest peacefully. But if you are going to restrict the rights of other people, if you are going to coerce them, if you are going to intimidate them and unleash violence, security forces of our country are going to defend our people.
Chief opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, the DA, is in court today trying to get an interdict declaring the EFF's planned shutdown unlawful, preventing it from closing schools, businesses and roads. Malema dismisses the DA's bid as nonsense.
They're not interdicting the protest. They're saying they're interdicting violence and intimidation, which has never happened. How do you interdict non-existing thing?
Malema says everything the EFF's done so far has been geared towards preventing violence on Monday. He says party leaders have spent months meeting with big business, airports, retail stores, law enforcement agencies and others to give them notice of peaceful protest.
It's only courtesy that you go to them and say, we know you use this facility on a daily basis, but please be aware that this facility will be occupied by a protest on the 20th of March. We did the same thing with the malls and the shops and business precisely because we want to avoid looting.
But as analysts point out, many previous EFF demonstrations have turned violent. And with a party adamant that the country is going to shut down Monday, and the government equally adamant it's not, tension is already building. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Season 3 of the Basketball Africa League is here. Starting off in Dakar from March 11th to March 21st for the Sahara Conference, then heading to Cairo from April 26th to May 6th for the Nile Conference, and the excitement continues to build in the finals in Kigali from May 21st to May 27th. Tune in and follow the BAL starting this Saturday on The Voice of America.
The UN says in the past week, 100,000 people in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo have fled their homes following fighting between M23 rebels and government forces. The UN accuses Rwanda of backing the rebels, a claim Rwanda denies. As Henry Ridgway reports for VOA, critics say European powers should pressure Rwanda to end the fighting.
At least 600,000 people have been forced to flee the fighting in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo in recent months. Many are living in refugee camps like this one in Goma. Refugee Espoir Ndagije said coming here to Goma was the only option because the M23 rebels control all the other territories. Life is hard here. We need help. The M23 rebels claim they are defending ethnic Tutsis in eastern DRC, drawing on the long-standing tensions between Tutsis and Hutus that led to the Rwandan genocide in 1994. A panel of United Nations experts released a report in late December that found widespread evidence that Rwanda was supporting the M23 rebels and even sending its own troops over the border. The DRC, along with the European Union and the United States, also blames Rwanda for supporting the insurgency. A UN delegation visited the region this week. The DRC's Minister of Humanitarian Affairs, Modeste Mutinga Mutushai, said, "We are all listening, hoping that clear instructions, clear messages will be sent to Rwanda and to the M23, so that on the 31st of March, at the latest, our territory can be liberated." Rwanda has denied supporting the M23 rebels and accuses Kinshasa of supporting Hutu rebels. Congo suspects Rwanda is seeking control of the DRC's rich mineral resources. But there are other possible drivers of the conflict. In 2021, the DRC signed a series of trade deals with its neighbour, Uganda. Analysts say Rwanda's President Paul Kagame disapproved. Michaela Wrong is an author and journalist on the Great Lakes region.
Kagame didn't like it. He felt sidelined. He felt bypassed. He felt that he is the key player in the Great Lakes region. And he wasn't easy with the idea that these two neighbors were getting on so well and that in future economic trade was going to be bypassing Rwanda.
French President Emmanuel Macron attempted to broker a ceasefire on a visit to the region this month. Congolese protesters demanded that he support sanctions against Rwanda.
La France a constamment condamné le M23.
Macron said France has consistently condemned the M23 and all those who support it, and I am here to make sure that everyone takes responsibility, including Rwanda. Britain, meanwhile, has not directly blamed Rwanda for backing the M23. Critics say the British government is reluctant to criticise its African ally after striking a deal last year with Rwanda to send asylum seekers there for processing. Again, author Michaela Wrong.
So I'm afraid Britain is highly compromised on this issue, and it's not going to form part of a united donor front. And that's what we need. We need the donors to come together and to send a really clear signal to Rwanda that this kind of behaviour is having such massive consequences on the ground.
The British government did not respond directly to VOA requests for comment. Ministers have previously expressed concern about violence in the region and called on all parties to commit to peaceful dialogue. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Kota, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first,
The Tunisian opposition is already preparing for next year's presidential election, even though many of its leaders have been imprisoned for allegedly plotting against state security. President Kais Saied moves to bolster his power, including dissolving municipal courts last week, have caused the World Bank to suspend future engagement talks with Tunisia. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El Shenawi discussed with William Lawrence, professor of political science at the American University in Washington, whether a united opposition can force a return to some sort of democratic transition in Tunisia.
Eventually, yes, but not quite yet for several reasons. First of all, early after the coup, the army, many civil society organizations, and one of the 10 largest parties and some other minor parties that had no seats in government were supporting the president's coup and created the space for him to impose this new system on the Tunisian people that he designed basically himself. That happens because Tunisians were exhausted by COVID, hit hard by the economic crisis caused by COVID, and then by the many other global factors that hit many other countries, and decided to blame the entire political class and were supporting early on a savior figure who had come in to save them. They have gradually figured out that this gentleman is not interested in economics, which was his main proposal to support his coup, and that he's really only interested in this utopian political vision doomed to failure. And so the quasi-totality of civil society now and all the political parties are opposed to him, but they feel they can't do anything yet if the army is still supporting him. And they have yet to turn out large numbers in the street. I think the largest protests we've had are in the 10 to 20,000 range. And many analysts, including myself, agree that until larger numbers of Tunisians, you know, 50,000, 60,000 are out in the street, the army is unlikely to budge and he'll be able to hang on to power against these nonviolent protests. There's another scenario, which that's the economic crisis becomes much worse and the majority of Tunisians who care more about economics than politics decide to riot and raise havoc and take more radical or revolutionary actions, in which case you might have the army or powers that be turn against the president as destabilizing. But for now, the exhaustion and the relative passivity of the Tunisian population in the face of the economic crisis has allowed him to hang on. It's not that the opposition isn't unified, they are now. It's that they're not turning out large numbers in the streets that would force things the other way. And the president is using that exhaustion, that passivity to his advantage.
The World Bank has temporarily suspended its future engagement talks with Tunisia amid uproar over recent statements by President Kais Saied against African migrants. The two sides were engaged in talks for providing Tunisia with loans up to $520 million. How could the behavior of the president complicate the Tunisian economic crisis?
It's doing it on a daily basis. Let's understand that we have had nationwide violence against dark-skinned Tunisians, whether legal migrants, refugees, the 8,000 African students in Tunisia who have been beaten, robbed, evicted, and are living in fear to the point that Tunisian friends of mine are distributing food to them in their homes because they're afraid to leave them, if they're even able to stay in their homes. Others are congregating outside, UNHCR and international organizations, or they've been evacuated by plane by their home governments in one of the most awful racist moments in North Africa that I'm aware of in modern history. It's atrocious. It's fascistic language the president used in his February 21st address based on the Tunisian Nationalist Party's rhetoric, which is fascist. And he's doing this apparently in part to distract Tunisians from the political crackdown that's going on, in which he's arresting many opposition figures, any of his critics that are outspoken, and the Tunisians that tried to convene a national dialogue to get Tunisia out of the political crisis. They're all in jail. So this is a turn for the worse. There's no focus on economics. The World Bank is shocked. The African Union has been increasingly shocked. The African Union, which had already deemed the president's actions a coup. And now the World Bank has not suspended all programs, but it suspended forward programs, the discussions towards the next round of programs. And the IMF has not come through with its $1.9 billion bailout loan for Tunisia, not because of the racist actions of Tunisia yet, although they're also expressing concern, but because Tunisia is just not paying attention to economics and isn't even filling out the paperwork related to the deal they've already argued.
William Lawrence is a professor of political science at the American University in Washington. He spoke with Mohamed El Shenawy.
How do you get international news? Radio, television, social media, or all of the above? Stay engaged with VOA Africa. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp. Leave a message, comments, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code plus 1, then 202-258-3076.
In a February visit to Sudan, the head of the UN World Food Programme said 75% of the country's farmland goes unused, but with the help of investors, Sudan can go from receiving food aid to exporting food. But as Harry Wilkins reports for VOA from the Sudanese capital Khartoum, others say it's more complicated than that.
A video from United Nations World Food Programme Executive Director David Beasley has sparked debate online over whether Sudan could indeed boost output from its unused arable land.
This is a country that has 210 million acres of arable land, and only 25% of it is being used. But if we can get the private sector in here, working with the smallholder farmers, while we can grow the food we need, not just feed just Sudan, but actually feed the whole world.
Last month, Sudan saw record levels of food insecurity, according to the UN. The idea that it could feed itself and other countries in a region struggling not only with droughts but also with grain shortages caused by the conflict in Ukraine might seem far-fetched. Experts tell VOA that making use of the unused land is more complicated than Beasley implies. Professor Titus Awakuse is the Associate Dean for Research and Strategic Partnerships at Michigan State University.
My first reaction to the video was that it sounded like if the solution is straightforward and is simple. And from my experience, I think the issues are more complex and more nuanced than that.
He went on to cite the need for better infrastructure and better regulation. Financial transactions from abroad are also difficult because of the sanctions on the country. Some investing in Sudan told VOA that risk due to political instability are also a problem. While the United Arab Emirates and China have invested, the risk profile for Western companies is too high, they said. For their part, smallholder farmers say they would welcome any investment. Ahmed Salam Mohamed Al Helu says it would transform his business. He says if given more money, he would expand his business. If he had enough, he would plant vegetables that were impossible for him to access before. He'd buy new land. Abdullah Mohamed El Amin, a retired agricultural scientist turned smallholder, says private sector investment could bring big benefits.
Yeah. Farmers here used to do something as they know, and their knowledge is not sufficient. But if they find an investment, they will follow the right way and they will do better.
It is up to the government to make legislative reforms, says Yahia Omar Adam, director of the Institute of Environmental Studies at the University of Khartoum. He says some neighbouring countries have managed to do that well.
We have a good example of our neighbour Ethiopia. I think there is external or internal investment in agriculture, and they are very successful. I think that is a good lesson for us to learn.
Functions of the state in Sudan are said by experts to be at a standstill, as a military junta that took power in 2021 keeps a stranglehold on power while showing little interest in governing. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Khartoum, Sudan.
The United Nations warned Friday that 10 million children in the Central Sahel region of West Africa are in desperate need of humanitarian aid. The children's agency UNICEF says that the number of children in need in Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger is twice as many as in 2020. It says another 4 million children are at risk in neighboring countries where there is fighting between Islamic rebels and security forces. In some areas, the rebels blockade towns,
sabotage waterworks, and burn and loot schools, 8,300 of which have been closed across the three countries. Many of the children that have been killed died of gunshot wounds or roadside bombs. UNICEF is calling on all parties to end attacks on children and schools. It's also calling for over $473 million in humanitarian aid for the Sahelian countries and neighboring coastal states now affected by the insurgency. Right now, it's time for music from our African collection.
Big stars, big cash, my way, but still a family. Under 1 minute, still I can't believe. But I can't blame myself for this. New man that was born for this. Of course, I was up. Who never put up hands in the air? No hands. Still I can't believe. You know what I mean? I was young, what you expect from me? It is what it is. But I keep going, no. More like a rolling stone, cause I have no stopping time. Can nobody stop a man? Oh, I keep going, no. More like a rolling stone, cause I have no stopping time. Can nobody stop a man? No, I'm gonna run my race, I'm gonna keep my pace. Cause I really have no one to blame when I fall again. I can't stand this pain, I can't watch me fail. So anytime you pray, remember my name, remember you know what travel are. The name is Greg the Hustler, he's me far away, just in Kuala La. I'll be back again, promise coming, I swear on my life. I can't wait to be back, I know you miss me, I know. Remember you know what travel are. The name is Greg the Hustler, he's me far away, just in Kuala La. I'll be back again, promise coming, I swear on my life. I can't wait to be back, I know you miss me, I know. When it's on and it's on, you can't stop till it's done. See, goddamn, I'm a buck. I'm brand new, I'm a sister. It's a great man, oh. That pain for an image. It's a great man, oh. It's a great man, oh. When it's on and it's on, I can't stop till it's done. See, goddamn, I'm a buck. I'm brand new, I'm a sister. It's a great man, oh. That pain for an image. It's a great man, oh. It's a great man, oh. See me on the road, my friend, talking to you, boys. Remember, you know what you're doing.
Baby, t'es ma droga. Baby, quand je te vois bailar. Ma droga. Baby, quand je te vois bailer, la 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 la. Yeah. Notre histoire, j'en fais un film, j'en fais une saga. On s'est connus un jour d'été à Malaga. Y'a encore ton odeur quand je défais mes bagages. Y'a encore nos deux cœurs suspendus dans les nuages. Je la taquine le matin quand elle se maquille. Elle aime la rumba, elle danse sur taki-taki. Donne-moi ta main qu'on danse toute la vie. Baby, baby. Si belle, mi amor, baila. J'pourrais te regarder toute ma vie. Te regarder quand tu oh, baila. La lune et les étoiles aussi. Te regarde quand tu oh, baila. Diala oh, baila. Ay papa mio, asema. C'est Dieu qui brille, même que le ciel s'assombrit. Ay papa, es mia siempre. Une fleur cachée dans ce petit village. Ay que calor, que hay aquí. De Puerto Rico, je l'amène à Miami. Et mi amor, yo soy Kenji. Je te kidnappe, je t'amène à Gitani. Le matin, elle a fait son petit sac à dos. Pour que je l'amène en balade sur la moto. Je la rassure, bébécita. Morena pour le pire et le mejor. Baila. Toute la nuit, toute la nuit. Tu es si belle, mi amor.
Oh,
sabi girl no dey too like talk. Animals dey in human form. Body man nobody like walk. But you must hustle if you want job. You no finish, they won't fight us. If them they run, them no fit catch up. I know they form say I too righteous. No con they form say you too like us. You no get the time for the hate and the bad energy. Got my mind on my money. Make you dance like broccoli. Steady green like broccoli. Steady on my grind, oh yeah, what they want telling me. Could deny my fantasy. They want to check if my dad be no wrong. But in the rush, in the rush, where well, it be much. Now gonna make my dad be the rush. The kind money we touch, yeah. In the rush, in the rush, where well, it be much. No be hype, everybody be crush. There's no darling with us.
Simbisa maget, asika na japera, japera. Usa faite chingo jinetera.
Iko katika chakuda kufixa Wawasia na naye murudo kaneka kuzinyabera Chanjera kuzuviringira life yako Nekuda kupoa ma ex Unenge uchapera marine mabanduru uchida kupoa ma ex Marambana, hapadi kushanda my feelings Tiripa maticha eru, datopa matichings Charamba ni savanu, kanya yeke chiting Rudo noda kukuchizir, wase moto mukichen Vachata shekuro vana, jubo kisen Sobaya moyo wangu ini juje kisen Murudo, hamudi, ukeputen Siyaji keputeni Unogo na kuita stress, oja sedi munu Oda kutishinzi, ex ndia bedi munu Wawaku shamba zasa mai, itira na muchata na na muchizire Kote muma bedroom Sakai wewe, why did you block my number? Ndakaeza kuzifonira tichiramba Ndaijiziva tichatamba Songa seven number zangu kutiplamba Weta umpunza ex, why unizi? Why, why? Kana kumonditi wo yesi naichi Why, why? Hongu taka tukana, tukana Why? Dogu bata bukana, bukana Why? Gati zive ijika wana mukana Chisinda pere mupenyu wapana Chingo mutiwa arise imuni wako Ajime kutomba kuvenga iwe chako Kudara takaita mafight Batava right inda kango kurambira unu wako Asi chini So many reasons why I wanted for you my love You do to make me know, no. This distance is taking a hold on me for sure. Baby, come. I'm a hard everyday. And I make you lose, no. I feel like make you lose, oh no. I'm a hard everyday. And I make you lose, no. I feel like make you lose, oh no. Pull over, Shaping up this kind of things where they make man see ya. See ya. And me, I understand. So your dad don't like me, rara. Me, rara. Say me, I won't make you know. Say me there for you, rara. Yeah. And if not the pride be that, I feel like to see ya. See ya. I never tell you for nothing. This love will make you so good. Make you finish a punching. Wait, that you wanna be too nice. Put you with the feel.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
Nightlight Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Mike Holvey, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, when a single hair has fallen from your head, you are not bald. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.